Back here on the midday show,
I'm eating Whataburger taquitos. We're trying to figure out who the guests are coming on this program next. We're making moves. We care about y'all back home though.
Bit of chaos right now. Coming up at 11:20, we're going to speak with Steve Donahue. He's the coach at Penn. They face Kansas in the first round, so he's going to have some perspective on the Jayhawks. And Kyle Keller from SFA, he'll join us at 12:10. Looking forward to that conversation as well, BK.
No doubt about it. Having a lot of fun down here. Westwood One's coverage, Radio Row down in San Antonio, Texas, the Alamo City. There are radio stations all over the place. And if you're just joining us, where have you been? You missed a heck of an hour one. We talked to Clark Kellogg of CBS Sports to start off the show. Man, he's got some style, man. He's rocking that fedora. I'm looking at him across the way. I can't pull that one off. It's looking good over here.
He's smooth, and he's been doing this for 22 years now. He knows how to handle the Radio Row scene, including making sure to get our names right, too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we talked to Brad Underwood, coach at Illinois. We talked to Steve Henson, coach at UTSA. Ooh. We even talked to some Alamo historians. There's a lot of shenanigans going on down here.
Hey, while we have a couple minutes, let's talk a little Texas hoops, because there were a few more transfers yesterday, or actually one transfer and one guy who announced he's going pro. I guess he's going to play over in Russia or Poland or something like that. Eric Davis has announced that he is done with college. He's going to make money to play basketball now. Good luck to him. Also, James Banks, not totally unexpected. James Banks announced that he's leaving the program as well, seeking a transfer to a school where maybe he gets a couple more minutes down low. Look, James Banks is one of those guys that you didn't expect him to do a whole lot the first couple of years within your program, but considering how good Darren Horn has been about developing big guys, he's one of those dudes that you felt like could be a Prince eBay type impact guy, that by his junior or senior year he could provide some quality minutes, especially on the defensive end and rebounding for this basketball team.
Yeah, you hoped so. And look, James Banks, from what we saw of him his freshman year, because we didn't get to see him play a whole lot this year, he's a freak athlete, right? A great defender, great rebounder, but one of his problems is, and maybe I can't call him a great defender, he's a great shot blocker, but he struggled to defend without fouling. That was a big issue.
True.
This was a dude who'd play 15 minutes and accumulate four fouls, which is not what you want. Didn't have a whole lot of offensive game, and James Banks, a guy who didn't start playing basketball until later in his high school year. So, the depth on this team. I'm looking at this roster from this past year, Trey, the team that, of course, lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament a couple of weeks ago. Who's coming back? Matt Coleman, Jace Fabris.
Dylan Osetkowski.
We see Dylan Osetkowski. Royce Hamm is on here, but hearing some rumblings that might not be the case.
Kerwin Roach?
Jericho Sims.
Maybe.
Jericho Sims.
Jericho Sims.
Those are the only four right now. Matt Coleman, Jace Fabris, Dylan Osetkowski, and Jericho Sims. Like, if the season started tomorrow, and I guess you throw Royce Hamm in there because he hasn't announced transferring. Those guys, that's all this team has on its roster right now.
At this point, do you have to question Shaka Smart's ability to manage a roster and also wonder if the mismanagement of his roster and the guys that he specifically has brought in here is going to lead to his downfall here in Austin?
Boy, it's been an issue. And this is somebody tweeted at me yesterday. I call this Judgment Day. I mean, this offseason has been Judgment Day for this Texas basketball team. So much attrition going on. So many guys leaving. Of course, there's four recruits, four signees for the class of 2018 coming next year. But, man, I don't know. I mean, these are recruiting misses. Guys like Jacob Young and James Banks are clear recruiting misses because they got scholarships here and they're leaving the program after a couple of years. The Eric Davis situation, that's out of Shaka Smart's control. That's out of this coaching staff's control. That guy was in purgatory, potentially was never going to get cleared by the NCAA again, so he didn't have a choice but to go pro.
It's a unique situation, but at the same time, how much had Eric Davis developed through his 3 years here?
No, exactly. And, boy, that's the question. I mean, looking at this roster next year, I don't know what to expect with Andrew Jones. I mean, look, you just hope the guy stays healthy enough, and then basketball might be an afterthought right now for Andrew Jones. So we're just hoping he gets back to health. Not sure if you can expect him to be a contributor for next year's team. Matt Coleman will be a year older. Osetkowski will be a senior. Jericho Sims showed some signs at the end of this year. But, man, right now, this was already a pretty disappointing year for Texas basketball. You know, there were some unforeseen circumstances that happened, but I think people had higher expectations than what took place for 2017-2018. Now looking at next year, it might be a step back for this Longhorn basketball program with the uncertainty of who's going to be on this roster.
Going to be relying on more youth next year, and I know that's the name of the game in college basketball to a degree, but you have to get guys to your senior
yep.
years go. Not only are they possibly losing one potential senior guard off of this year's team, and Kerwin Roach, depending on what he decides to do with his future, but how many soon-to-be juniors are no longer a part of this roster as well? I think they've lost every member of that 2016 recruiting class at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Other than Andrew Jones, if and when he comes back.
Exactly. No, it's frustrating for a Texas basketball fan. And look, hopefully there's something in place for Shaka Smart, maybe going to the JUCO ranks, looking for some transfer players. Of course, who's coming in? Mitru Long will be coming in as a transfer, a guy who sat out this year.
Elijah Long, yeah.
But still, the questions are there for Texas basketball. And I don't know what to expect from this team. It's not a good sign that you have... Look, having guys leave early for the pros. I mean, you knew Mo Bamba was going to be one and done. You want to get recruits like that. But look at the Final Four, where we are right now in San Antonio. Look at all the experience on all of these teams. I mean, Kansas is led by a bunch of seniors and upperclassmen. Villanova is a lot of juniors and seniors on their bunch. Loyola is all seniors. Michigan, a ton of juniors and seniors on
their
squad.
Still matters.
It still matters. It still matters. And unless you're recruiting like Kentucky or Duke, where you're getting three or four McDonald's All-Americans every year, it's tough to win with one-and-done talent. You have to develop players. You have to get guys to stay in your program for two, three, maybe 4 years. And Texas just hasn't been able to do that in the Shaka Smart regime. And look, the on-floor product has been very frustrating, but the fact that, well, we're sitting here right now after 3 years of this regime, not knowing what the next step is for Texas basketball, that's even more concerning for me.
You need guys to stick around in the system. And we also need to see this coaching staff, and Shaka Smart specifically, show a willingness to actually play some of these other guys who may not be Big 12 game ready earlier in the season, so he's not wearing down the six or seven guys that he's using in that primary rotation.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought right there, right? Where was Jericho Sims the first half of the year? That dude was just sitting on the bench. I can't believe I'm saying this, but even Jacob Young to an extent.
Sure.
I mean, we saw some signs from
him
down the stretch.
Every scholarship guy that you have, maybe with some exception, should be playing their freshman year, even if 5 to 7 minutes a night.
And look at a team like Texas Tech, right, in this conference, in this state, a team that made it to the Elite Eight. They go 10 or 11 deep. 10 yeah. or 11 deep. And they're playing freshmen, they're playing sophomores, they're playing transfers, they're playing everybody. And that's where you need to get, where you have that depth on your squad, where you can't only trot out six or seven guys out there and expect to get it done. Look, it's questionable. It is very questionable right now. This offseason has not been great for Texas basketball. Now, I don't want to say, you know, raise the white flag and say this thing is over and this team has no chance to be successful next year, but if Kerwin Roach doesn't come back, which everybody is assuming that he is, I would say hold off the assumptions right now. We just don't know. If he doesn't come back, I don't know what this team is going to be next year. I mean, outside of Matt Coleman and Dylan Osetkowski and Jericho Sims, you're going to be trotting out freshmen or transfer players. This team could take a step back. And we're talking about a coach who's on the hot seat. I mean, let's face it. If Shaka Smart, I don't know if just making the tournament is going to be enough in year four. Like, he might have to win a game or maybe two games next year. I know he's got under contract for a few more years, but this fan base I don't think is thrilled with the way the first 3 years have gone. This team has to take a step, give you some positivity towards a year five in this regime. And as of right now, sitting here on March 29th, it just doesn't look like that's going to happen.
It depends on how they get to the tournament. If they do a good job in conference play and finish with a good conference record.
If they're a five seed and lose to a 12, that would suck. But come on, I mean, that's a positive sign. You could deal with that going forward. But if this team is one of the first four teams in again next year and they lose in the first round, and it's like, well, what are we doing here?
Other than knowing whether or not Kerwin Roach comes back next year, the biggest thing and whether this team is able to be successful throughout next season or not is how much Dylan Osetkowski commits himself to the game of basketball. His final year of eligibility at the college level, I'm sure he'll end up going and playing pro somewhere in Spain or Greece or Russia or something like that. Dylan Osetkowski has to show the ability to stay focused on basketball instead of allowing himself to be distracted by things like haircuts and Twinkies and ding-dongs and things like that.
Oh, and the haircuts bring back the braids. No, I'm telling you, they're going to have to, what, they do that lazy boy recliner shot? at the games at the Irwin Center. They're going to have to, like, oh, if you make a shot, yeah, we need you on the team. We're going to need you out to play. We
no
don't
doubt.
Have enough bodies out there. So there it is. Yeah, some Texas basketball happenings. Crazy offseason continues for the Longhorns. We're going to take a break right now. Who do we have next? Coach Donahue. Steve Donahue, the head coach at Penn, will join the program. Penn, of course, won the Ivy League this year, made the tournament, and got to face one of the Final Four teams, Kansas, in the first round. We'll talk to Coach on the other side. We are here, Westwood One NCAA Final Four Radio Row. It's been brought to you by Cintas. More than 1 million businesses trust Cintas to help them open their doors with confidence. Learn how they can get your business ready at Cintas.com. Cintas, ready for the workday. All right, we will take a break. Coach Donahue coming up next. It's Midday with Trey and BK, live from San Antonio, right here on the Horn. Carson Wentz went out. You had to be thinking.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK, live from Westwood One's NCAA Final Four Radio Row, and it's brought to you by Kitta. Score points by installing Kitta's worry-free combination alarm. One unit offers 10 years of warnings of fire and CO, saving you time and money. Plus, it reduces nuisance alarms. Kitta, technology that saves lives, and that's spelled K-I-D-D-E, BK.
No doubt. We are joined by head coach of the Penn Quakers, Steve Donahue, right now. Coach, thanks so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
You know, you guys had a great year this year, winning the Ivy League and getting the chance to play one of these teams here this weekend, the Kansas Jayhawks. Look, I'm a KU fan. I didn't tell you that before we started.
Yeah.
I want to make sure you didn't get up and leave. Right
so am I, to be honest with you. I love them. I do.
There you go. They play a great brand of basketball. But you guys were up 10, up double digits in the first half of that game against an extremely talented Jayhawks team. What was that experience like, getting sort of to test how talented you guys were and giving KU a good run?
Yeah, I think it's like it's been recognized in this tournament, the landscape of college basketball is dramatically different. We were 1-16, and I didn't think physically I felt that. And typically, I've been a 15 and a 14, and it was like light years difference. There wasn't that much difference physically between the two teams. And if we made foul shots, we were 5-14. I thought it would have went down to the wire. That being said, Kansas is playing incredible basketball. I think Bill Self's best coaching job, as a lot of people have said.
Yes, sir.
Changed his style, and they're a fun team to watch. I think the Villanova-Kansas game is going to be great. Just a high-scoring game. Both teams really, really play great offense. I think the difference is Villanova really guards.
Yes, they do. And, Coach, you've taken another Ivy League school all the way to the Sweet 16. That was Cornell back in 2009, 2010. What is the key in a mid-major, a Cinderella story, if you will, making a run that deep in the tournament?
I think the number one key is that you have older kids that understand what you're about. We were fortunate before that run to go to back-to-back NCAA tournaments. And we're basically, you know, we played a Stanford team with the Lopez twins. I remember thinking, like, they were kind of joking that thought we were a high school team. And it looked like it at times. They were so physical. And then think about it, Lopez twins as seniors.
Yeah.
And then we played Missouri with a kid, Carroll, who's a great NBA player. And we played better. And then everyone back again, a few parts. And I just thought that experience really helped us, and we kept the group together, and I think that's what you're seeing with Loyola. However, they had a losing record last year. Like, this is an incredible Cinderella story,
yeah,
and what Porter Moser has done, for sure.
Coach, I have to ask, you know, you being in a mid-major, not one of the Power Five conferences, this year the selection committee did not do any favors to the smaller schools. You know, teams like Syracuse and Arizona State got nods over teams like Middle Tennessee, which I think is a little bit ridiculous. But does it sort of feel like the NCAA tournament and the selection committee is now doing whatever they can to prevent the little guys from getting in?
Well, here, and I said this before, here's a fact. The Power Five do not want this to be a mid-major Cinderella. They want majority of the money to stay in their conferences.
Sure.
Hence, they play 20 games. Now they play 20 league games to make sure you don't give those opportunities to the mid-majors. Quad 1, Quad 2, and Quad 3 eliminates even more opportunities when you look at it that way. The only way it can change, really, is if they decide that we got to give a certain amount to these other 28, it's about 26 conferences, certain amount of at-large. Because Loyola wouldn't have got in if they didn't run the table as well. And then we all know, as fans, this has made this tournament special.
Yep.
This is what Loyola's done, what UNBC did, all those kind of. And then we still get two number ones here. I think it's the best tournament ever.
No doubt about that one. And, Coach, on that note, the NCAA is also considering easing up the transfer rules, which, again, would hurt mid-majors when guys want to jump from a mid-major into one of the elite college programs for the sake of exposure for perhaps the NBA or whatever their professional career ends up being. Are you opposed to that one as well?
It's a hard one. And it's going to come. It's going to come down the road.
You think it's just a matter of time when it happens?
It is. There's some legal things that are going on that I think the NCAA realizes they're going to have to do it. Now, there may be some GPA restrictions on it, which would help somewhat. Maybe kids would concentrate. The one narrative I'm really tired of, honestly, is that while the coaches can leave and they can go anywhere, and they so much for the players. Now, I will say, anytime a coach leaves, those kids should be free to go anywhere and go. I don't have a problem with that. But the reality of it is the players actually control the narrative. If some five kids decide to leave a program, that coach is done.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting fired.
Yes, sir.
That's a simple fact.
Harsh reality.
Now, I don't know what the answer is. I think kids should have a right to go. The other fact is, even though I think it's going to be like 40% of kids transfer within the first 2 years of college now at the high major level. The average rate of a kid, and I have two in college myself, 38% of a typical kid transfers. It's not that. This is a crazy age for
kids.
Wow,
right. How about that?
18 to 22.
I didn't realize it was
that high. Yeah. You have a lot of kids that don't know. Come to my family. Come to our dinner table and start listening to what goes on. They're not sure what the heck's going on. It's not that crazy. But I don't know what the answer are for the whole scheme. People have to realize the players do, and if this goes in, they deserve it, but it makes it coaching at that level, mid-major, that much harder.
Coach, if I'm not mistaken, I've been seeing Bo Ryan walk around this place. Now, your Cornell team back in 2010 knocked out Bo Ryan's Wisconsin squad. Is he able to look at you in the eyes? Are you guys able to talk?
Well, Bo is a dear friend. We grew up about a mile and a half from each other, believe it or
not.
How
about that?
From Philadelphia. And that tournament, I played Fran Dunphy, who I worked with for 10 years, a dear friend, who grew up 2 miles from me. And we advanced to Wisconsin and played Bo and had a great run. He's a great friend. What a coach. And what he did at Wisconsin's crazy.
No doubt about that. And, Coach, last thing for you here. I know you've got some other tables to visit on Radio Row. But the stereotype is that you're responsible for coaching a bunch of smart kids. They're in the Ivy League, after all.
The nerds are calling the nerds.
What do you do when you get these so-called smart kids in to practice for the first time to show them, look, you may be book smart, you may know a lot on the basketball court, but there's still plenty more to learn?
I think they're respectful enough, but sometimes I'll say some things that are grammatically incorrect,
uh-oh,
historically incorrect, and you'll see them smirk and laugh because these kids are incredible. I'm fortunate I have 23 years of experience of being around them. But you know what? The honest fact is kids are kids.
Yeah.
They're silly. They're goofy. They want to have fun in basketball. They want a career out of it. They want a great experience. It's not as different as you think. It really isn't. It's really fun to coach them. Because I do think they're about the team more than anything else, and that's what makes it fun to coach.
Yes, sir. Well, Coach, this has been a lot of fun. We appreciate you stopping by, and best of luck this weekend, and hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Coach. Coach Steve Donahue, head coach at Penn. Of course, the Quakers winning the Ivy League this year and got the reward of taking on Kansas. Boy, I was shocked. On day one, I was nervous that Penn was going to pull off the upset. Once the brackets came out, Penn actually held a 10-point lead in that game.
Yeah.
And seeing what UMBC did to Virginia the next day made me feel not so crazy for thinking maybe the nerds at Penn had a chance to pull off the upset. But Steve Donahue, hell of a guy and a hell of a coach as well.
BK, we talked about it all year long. We had major college basketball guests on, and we would ask them without fail whether this was the year we finally see a 16-1, because it felt like, if not this year, it was going to be close, and sure enough, it happened this year.
And Coach Donahue gave a great answer to that. Look, nowadays, the 16 and the 1, the difference in physical stature and talent is not that much.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't feel like it was back in the day when Steve Nash was leading Santa Clara to a win as a 15 seed. You just look at these two teams and say, how in the hell did that just happen?
Yep.
Nowadays, some of these smaller schools, they're getting some talent. They're getting some big kids and making things happen. And yeah, that was a beatdown, of course, by UMBC. All right, how's our break? Do we have a little bit? Do we already take a break this hour? Are we good? I have no idea what's going on anymore.
Look, we can We can take one right now to try and set something up for 11:50 if we want to. We can talk for a couple minutes if we want to do that as well.
All right, let's go. You know, we're at Final Four, of course. We'll talk all things college hoops. But, Trey, it's opening day. Let's do a little bit of baseball talk right here.
By the way, at some point you checked out of the draft last night.
Of course. I went to bed.
Fantasy baseball draft.
Did I get Hanser Alberto? I put him as my number one on my QU list.
You got a couple of guys that I was like, I don't think he would want this person.
But I get like everybody who's injured, like Madison Bumgarner, Justin Turner, like all those dudes.
You may have gotten a couple of those guys as well, but you also got some division rivals. I think you even drafted a Cardinal as well, and I don't think that you would be on board
I'm
with that.
I'm cutting that guy. I don't even need a return. I'm cutting
Matt
that
Carpenter,
dude.
You're gone.
Oh, see you later. All right, so baseball is back today. I think 11:30 right now on the Four Letter Network. You've got your first game of the year. It's the Chicago Cubs, of course, the 2016 World Series champions taking on the Miami Marlins. I mean, what a joke that is. That's the first game we're stuck watching with how bad Florida is going to be under Derek Jeter.
Time to get the At-Bat app fired up.
I've got it. I paid the MLB At-Bat, the MLB Extra Innings, so we're taken care of. We'll be watching all sorts of baseball throughout the dog days.
Nice.
And we'll spare you. We know how some of you out there can't deal with more than 5 minutes of baseball talk. We'll spare you. We won't turn this into Box Score Radio every day moving forward.
We talked about it yesterday, though, BK, of who we think is going to make it to the postseason and ultimately the World Series and then who wins the championship. I gave you my World Series and championship team, so I'm curious to know who you have right now out of the AL and NL.
Did you? Who'd you pick yesterday? You chose the Astros.
Astros,
right?
Over the Cubs.
Over the Cubs. So the last two World Series winners getting back at it. Boy, I guess I need to make a prediction at some point now. All right, let me break down some of these teams before I do that. I'll do that before the end of this segment. Let's start with the Astros, though, Trey. Of course, the defending World Series champions. A phenomenal year, phenomenal run in the postseason, taking out some pretty damn historic teams. The Blue Bloods, if you will, of Major League Baseball in Boston, the Yankees, and, of course, the L.A. Baseball Dodgers en route to the first World Series in franchise history. The rich get richer for the Stros. Just about everybody is back. They also add Gerrit Cole to their starting rotation. Of course, you got Jose Altuve, the reigning AL MVP, anchoring that lineup. You get a full year of Yuli Gurriel. I guess he's hurt to start the year, but for the most part, you will get Gurriel in the mix. Of course, Springer and Bregman will be up for the full year. He's expected to take another step. The Astros are loaded from top to bottom, and there's a reason why they are the Vegas odds favorites at 5-1 to repeat as World Series champions.
And it begins with Altuve. He's going to be hitting in the two hole. He is a guy that does at least a little bit of everything and a lot of really good things, whether it's at the plate, on the bases, in the field. He is the catalyst in this team with the successes that they've achieved in the last year and winning the World Series. It begins with him, but there are plenty of guys around him as well who are not only good at fielding and also hitting the baseball, but also that pitching staff as well. And it begins today with Justin Verlander taking the mound against the Texas Rangers and Cole Hamels.
Yeah, I mean, how about the starting rotation for the Stros?
Ridiculous.
Verlander, Keuchel. I mean, Gerrit Cole was number four. Gerrit Cole was the ace of the Pittsburgh Pirates last year. Dude finished top five in the Cy Young voting a couple of years ago, and he is your number four guy. Plus, you got Lance McCullers, who was one of the best pitchers in the game for the first half of last year. Also, Charlie Morton, who was a postseason hero for the Stros.
I'm curious to see if Charlie Morton is able to carry that over. He's really struggled in spring training so far. I'm not going to be surprised to see him back in the bullpen before too long.
Well, they've got other options if he's not their number five guy, and that lineup is loaded. Look, if Marwin Gonzalez can have a similar year to what he had last year. Josh Reddick had a very good regular season. Now, in the playoffs, he was awful.
Oh, my gosh. What a dumpster fire of a human being he was in the postseason.
I couldn't. Of a human being?
Yes, as a human being.
Yeah, he was. He was throwing his helmet, throwing his bat. And the Astros almost won it in spite of him last October. But, look, he's a talented player. If he can get back to what he's capable of. Of course, Evan Gattis and Brian McCann, those dudes making things happen. It is a loaded Houston Astros bunch. And something that I heard, I was actually going back and forth between B&E and the Musers, the Morning Musers on the ticket up in Dallas.
You traitor.
Sorry. And they were doing a bit. Look, baseball has changed a little bit, right? The lineup used to be your leadoff man. Every team would follow this. Your leadoff man would be the fast, base-stealing contact hitter, the guy you know is going to get on base. The two would generally be just another great, maybe your best contact hitter would be the number two guy, so we could set the table. Number three would probably be your best overall hitter, the guy who's got that combo of power and contact. And the number four and five, of course, the cleanup man, those are your RBI run producers. Nowadays, in this age of sabermetrics that we have in baseball, more and more managers are putting their best hitter at the number two spot.
Yeah, it's your two best OPS guys at one and two.
So Jose Altuve will be hitting number two for the Astros today, and presumably for the course of the year.
Yeah.
And more surprisingly than that, going up I-45, the Texas Rangers, their number two hole hitter is Joey Gallo.
I disagree with that.
Okay, explain.
I still think you need your power guys to take their at-bats with as many guys on base as possible. I know it's a novel concept, but the guys who are at the end of that batting order, the 8 and 9, it's not the Houston Astros lineup from last year. It's usually guys who struggle to get on base. So especially for Joey Gallo, a guy who strikes out a whole lot,
yeah.
I would prefer to have him maybe in the 4 hole, moving everybody up a slot. Maybe you end up keeping Beltre at the 4 hole because Gallo actually has pretty good wheels. He is an excellent base runner, even if the stolen bases don't necessarily show for it. So I guess we're starting with Delino DeShields at the top of that order. I would have Elvis Andrews at number two.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see that, and I get it, right? The thought process is, well, the higher you are on the order, over the course of a 162-game season, you're going to get more at-bats. But, man, Joey Gallo, with all the power that dude has, that's a guy I think you want hitting fifth, right behind the likes of Elvis and Adrian Beltre and maybe even Nomar Mazara. So
I think Joey Gallo is primed for a breakout season, though. I don't think you're going to see the guy batting in the low 200s again. It may be closer to 250 while he continues to show that amazing once-in-a-lifetime power and also keeps the walk rate up as well.
I'll tell you what, man. He's got to cut down on those strikeouts a little bit.
The strikeouts are always going to come for him to a degree, but I think you will see a little bit of a diminishment in those as well.
No doubt about it. All right, so what are your expectations for the Rangers? You mentioned you have the Astros repeating as World Series champs, so obviously sky-high expectations down in Houston, and rightfully so after the year that they had. Any chance the Rangers, look, World Series is not a realistic goal for this team, but any chance they can compete for the second wild card spot, perhaps, in the American League?
What is it you call yourself with the Dallas Mavericks, Team Tank?
Team Tank?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's
I don't necessarily want this team to tank out of the gate.
Baggett for Bagley?
The baseball season is a long one, and you see teams do surprising things the first couple of months. It can really set the table for the rest of the way. But if this team is really struggling through April and May like I expect them to, then consider me Team Tank. I don't know who the number one prospect is in baseball for 2019, but if the Rangers are struggling through the first 2 months of the season, I don't want to see them all of a sudden catch fire to get back to 500 by the end of September.
Yeah, that's I'm kind of with you on that one. It could be an interesting year for the Rangers. Look, I don't think this is a team that gets more than 75 wins this year. All right, I lied. I'm not giving my World Series pick now. You're going to have to wait, Fulsh. You're going to have to wait till later in the program, but it'll happen today for sure as baseball gets set on the four-letter network. Of course, the Astros will begin their reign to defend their World Series crown today at 2:30 up in Arlington, taking on the Texas Rangers. You can hear that game on 101.9 and, of course, AM 1260. We are the home of Rangers baseball all season long. We are going to take a break, and we are here down at Radio Row. Westwood One's NCAA Final Four Radio Row has been brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal Credit Union is proud to serve the military. If you're a veteran or a member of the armed forces, the Department of Defense, or your family is, Navy Federal Credit Union would be proud to serve you too. Federally insured by NCUA, it's Navy Federal Credit Union. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, who knows? More guests. We are live down at Radio Row in San Antonio. You're listening to Midday with Trey and BK. This is The Horn.
All righty, back here on the Midday Show. We already have some really cool guests lined up for after the top of the hour. That includes Kyle Keller of SFA at 12:10. At 12:20, legendary UConn coach Jim Calhoun will join the program. I'm actually reading a book by one of his former players right now, BK, someone else who we also may get on the show sometime in the next couple of weeks, Ray Allen. So looking forward to talking with Jim about Ray Allen, also coaches versus cancer, which Jim is a big part of, and plenty more here from Radio Row in San Antonio, brought to you by Westwood One, also brought to you by the Madness, concluding with the Final Four National Championship this weekend on TBS. If you can't watch, be sure to listen on Westwood One.
How about that? TBS this year, not CBS for the first time.
It was like that last year, too.
Okay. Like that for the second time. I take back what I said.
Yeah, you know, people make a big deal about that, BK, and I guess I get that, too. But at this point, since everybody has every channel, is it that big of a deal anymore?
It feels that way, but, you know, there's a lot of cord cutters out there or people who just keep the basic cable. Now, a lot of those people have Sling or PS View or DirecTV Now. I mean, there's plenty of modes to get TBS and channels like TBS and TNT on. But some people just don't have anything more than basic cable, and it was always easy to watch. You know the Super Bowl is going to be on one of the basic cable networks, the CBS, Fox, NBC, ABC, whatever. And that was kind of the expectation, or what it always was for college basketball, for the national championship and the Final Four as well. So it is a little different, but, you know, it's easy to find. I still have cable. It's not an issue for me.
By the way, I need to give a shout-out to Bucky Godbolt listening right now. He's a little bit upset because...
Why does he keep calling me during these breaks, man? I'm working. I'm talking to people. I'm trying to schmooze like the Jewish mother that I am, okay?
We talked a little bit of history here on the show today. We had a couple of guys who work over at the Alamo helping inform people about one of the great relics in the history of this great state. And Bucky is upset because we have not been an equal opportunity radio show today in terms of talking about some African-American figures from history. So coming up at 12:30, it will be George Washington Carver. So Bucky and everybody else out there, stay tuned for that one.
Nope, that's not happening. That guy is not alive, I don't think.
Oh, is that right?
Is he alive? I don't know.
No, he's not alive.
Is that the Oscar Mayer, the carving turkey or whatever, is him?
He probably did carve turkeys for the white people who were ordering him around, but no, he is not that person.
Sorry about that. I'm not sure that should have been my first reference with George Washington Carver. Boy, all right. So, yes, we are talking all things NCAA. Let's talk a little Final Four right now, Trey,
sure.
While we have a little bit of a lull. We'll make our official final predictions tomorrow, although we kind of made them on Monday. Look, there's only three games left in the college basketball season, only three games left to project. But now that we're here, and it's pretty cool, man, being down here in San Antonio. Got a few minutes to walk around before the program, just a little bit of downtown. They've got all the hotels. I walk past, I guess, wherever Michigan is staying, because there's all sort of Michigan paraphernalia.
Oh, really? Okay.
All over the bottom at one of the hotels. But there's all kinds of brackets and signage everywhere with the four logos of the teams. It's cool to see Kansas there as a Kansas fan. I would have struggled seeing that Duke Blue Devils logo a lot all over the city. You got concerts coming up. The Imagine Dragons are going to be here tomorrow. Jason Aldean will be here today. Luis Fonsi, the guy who sings Despacito, he'll be here tomorrow.
Desperado, that song.
Not the Eagles. No, not Glenn Frey. Nope, not those
Why
guys.
Why don't you come to? By the way, we see Doug Gottlieb across the way as well. He just left the table, but he's over there now. I know a lot of people want to punch that dude in the face.
Oh, so say that so loud.
Certainly not going to be doing that. But maybe we'll have a chance to get him on the show because he likes to say things that piss people off.
I'll tell you what. Well, we don't feel that way. He's an interesting follow on Twitter. He does say some controversial, some good things though.
Yeah.
Opinion starters. He knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
Hey, Trey, okay, so as we're 2 days away from the Final Four, now that we're around it and everything, look, Villanova, Kansas, that's the matchup right there. I mean, that's your two number one seeds. Kansas is a traditional blue blood. Villanova has become a blue blood. Jay Wright, to quote John Rothstein, who also of CBS, I believe, he calls Villanova a Fortune 500 company. One that practically runs itself. I mean, that is what Villanova has turned into. They are now a blue blood of college basketball with the success that they've had under Jay Wright. I believe it's three Final Fours now under Jay Wright as the coach. Of course, they won the national championship 2 years ago, finally getting over that hump and going up against Kansas. You know, what about this matchup? What is your X factor, if you will, between Kansas and Villanova, something that's going to decide the game? Because as of right now, you've got KU winning this game. I've got Villanova. Why do you like the Jayhawks on Saturday night?
On my bracket, the one final four team I have left is Villanova, and I actually have them making it to the championship game over Michigan State. Thanks a whole lot for that round of 32 performance
on,
there,
Izzo.
Sparty. But I think the X factor on Saturday, BK, is going to be heart. The heart of the Jayhawks, the fact that everybody continues to doubt that they can continue to get the job done, and I think you will see them do so as a result. They have a ton of senior leadership, as we've heard various coaches talking about today, and I just think they also have that intangible quality that just leads them to wins. They weren't expected to win the Big 12 championship this year. They weren't expected to necessarily win the conference tourney as well. I think both you and I picked West Virginia over Kansas in that one, and now here they are at the Final Four, despite the fact that, 95% of people filling out brackets had either Michigan State or Duke making the Final Four out of that region.
Yeah.
Kansas is going to get the job done again. They're going to win the national championship this year, too.
Boy, it's pretty funny. Kansas is playing the underdog role because, like you said, I mean, Duke and Michigan State were the favorites coming out of the Midwest Regional this year. And some people hate that. It's like, well, Kansas, what do you mean underdog? All the 4- and 5-star recruits you get in every year, what do you mean you're the underdog? But that's kind of how it's been. And I think that's the mindset this team has used. Everybody's been picking against them all year. They weren't expected to get to this point. They're 5.5 point underdogs again to Villanova. And look, I don't even know if it's the underdog mentality that has Kansas where they're at. I think it's the fact that they had come so close the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Right? Losing in the Elite Eight 2 years ago to this very Villanova team. Losing in the Elite Eight last year to Oregon. They were tired of losing earlier than they wanted to in the tournament. And I think they're on a little bit of a revenge tour right now. Now, they lost to Duke in the tournament way back in 86 and 91. But more recent times, look, Villanova was the team that knocked them out in 2016 in the Elite Eight, as I just mentioned. And if they get to Michigan in the championship game, Michigan knocked out KU in the Sweet 16 in 2013. Huh. So some recent history with some of these Final Four teams as well. And Kansas is kind of using that, I think, as the motivation. Juniors and seniors who have come so close but haven't tasted that final prize. Look, I just think Villanova's too good. I mean, they've got the experience.
Yeah.
And I came on Bucky and Aaron this morning, called in. They have the experience not only in juniors and seniors, like the stuff we're talking about with mm-hmm. Texas. You need to have juniors and seniors to make runs deep into the tournament. They've won a championship before.
That's
huge. A large percentage of their roster was on that national championship team from 2 years ago, which means they played at a football stadium. Right, which the backdrop is very different. It affects the shot for a lot of these teams. And they've done this before. So they've got the National Player of the Year and Jalen Brunson. I'll tell you what, that matchup with him against Devontae Graham is going to be a fun one to watch. Two of the best point guards in the country. Maybe the dudes that'll finish 1-2 in National Player of the Year voting. And another matchup to look out for. Malik Newman's been the best player of this tournament so far for any team.
He's about to go pro, too.
And him against Mikal Bridges, I assume that's going to be the man-to-man matchup. Both of those guys are athletic freaks. Both of those guys have futures at the next level. I'll tell you what, foul trouble is a huge part of this game. Kansas doesn't go as deep as Villanova does. We've seen Azubuike. Azubuike is the X factor in this game because Villanova, what they don't have is size. Their center is 6'7". Now, he's big. He's bulky. But he can't guard Azubuike, who's 7'270".
Spellman?
Yeah, Spellman and Pascal. I mean, those dudes are good. They can play. But if Azubuike could stay out of foul trouble and on the other end do a decent enough job stepping out to guard the perimeter against those Villanova bigs, then that's a matchup that Kansas can exploit all night long.
And Spellman has really asserted himself defensively these last couple of games down low as well. So you're absolutely right about that one, BK. Now, you said if Kansas faces Michigan in the championship game, you mentioned them losing to Michigan in the tournament more than 20 years ago now. Do you think that is going to happen? What do you think about Michigan versus Loyola in the earlier of the two Final Four matchups on Saturday?
Yeah, you know, sorry, Sister Jean. We're hoping to run into Sister Jean at some point, hoping to get her on the program.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if she's going to be here, but if I see her, like, I'm going to yell as loud as I can and pause her. I'm going to box her in. Like, I'm not going to let her move.
What, hold on. You can't do that to an old person, man.
Didn't you and Kevin, like, almost fight an old person one time in Chinatown in New York?
Kevin almost fought. Well, he didn't almost fight her. He would have whooped her had she tried to fight him.
I hope so. She
grabbed
like 95.
And he did the wrist pressure move to get her to let go of my arm, and it dropped her to her knees.
Dude.
And caused her to let go of her shopping cart full of aluminum cans. And then we booked it out of there from there.
That's terrible. Maybe she just wanted to say hi or something, man.
She didn't want me to take pictures with her. She didn't want to be treated like a tourist spot.
All right, that's fair. Look, I think
may have been what she was like 50 years ago,
yeah,
so it brought up some bad memories.
I think the run comes to an end for Sister Jean and Loyola. Now, can Loyola win this game? Absolutely. I mean, they've beaten very good teams on their way to this Final Four. They deserve to be here. It's been a magnificent run. But, look, Michigan's got better players. The reason they're a 3 seed out of the Big Ten, I think they've got a better coach, one of the best coaches in the country, and John Beilein. I just think the Wolverines will find a way to get it done. I think it's going to be ugly. Michigan's been winning with defense. So has Loyola. I mean, Loyola's been so efficient offensively, but they've done such a great job of keeping teams well below their season averages when it comes to them scoring. But 67-59 is the score that I'm thinking. I think Michigan finds a way to get it done.
Here's the thing about Michigan, though. Yes, I totally agree with you that they have the more talented roster. It's not like it's an uber-talented roster, though. It's not like the roster that got them to the Final Four in the championship game back in 2013.
No Trey Burke, no Hardaway Jr. You're right.
Other than Wagner, who is projected to be a second-round pick right now, it's a number of guys who not a whole lot was expected out of this year. But you're absolutely right. John Beilein, especially given time to scheme and game plan for the opposition, he is about as good as they come in this day and age. So maybe that ends up being the X factor because there is a Loyola Rambler grad in the Elling household. Yep. I'm still picking Loyola to win this game.
Oh, that's the only reason, huh?
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what, man. Loyola can play. Those young kids, Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson, both from Overland Park, Kansas. And how about the freshman big man, Cam Crutwig? Boy, that matchup with him and Mo Wagner is going to be interesting down low. All right, we are taking a break. We'll continue to talk more Final Four. Of course, some great guests coming up, including Jim Calhoun, Hall of Fame coach. Jim Calhoun will join us as well. And we're taking a break. Well, hey, we are down here. Westwood One's NCAA Final Four Radio Row. It's been brought to you by Boost Mobile. With Boost Mobile, you can get four lines for only $25 per line, each with unlimited gigs. Plus, get up to four free Samsung J7 perks and 6 months of Hulu, courtesy of our friends at Boost Mobile. All right, we're taking a break. Trey and BK live from Radio Row. Down in the Alamo City, you're listening to Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn.